Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
You know, people are trying to silence Michael Savage. That's me. I need your help. It's a big battle, a legal battle. The opposition has unlimited funds. I don't. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com, contribute $5, $10, $1,000, $10,000. You'll notice that you can contribute to the Legal Defense Fund under a new address. The mail goes to the Michael Savage, that's if a check, a money order, cash, Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. Thank you for helping protect freedom of speech. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. And God bless you for helping protect freedom of speech.
Savage.
Many of the hippies who gathered here in San Francisco during the Summer of Love went on to raise families, write books, and even to run corporations. And they carried with them the counterculture values once nurtured in places like the Haight. And along the way, they changed the world we live in. Today, our generation is the counterculture generation. We may not look like hippies anymore, but many of us still embrace their values.
Now, the message I have is an old one. It's the simplest and most classic message ever been passed on in world history. It's those six words, drop out, turn on, then come back and tune it in. And then drop out again and turn on and tune it back in.
Come on, pigs of Western civilization, eat more grease, eat. More marbled sirloin, more pork and gravy, lard up the dressing, fry chicken in boiling oil, carry it dribbling to gray climes, snowed with salt, little lambs covered with mint roast in racks, surrounded by roast potatoes wet with butter sauce, buttered veal medallions in creamy saliva, buttered beef by glistening mountains of French fries, stroganoffs in white hot sour cream, chops soaked in olive oil, surrounded by olives, salty feta cheese, followed by Roquefort and Blue and Stilton, thirsty for wine, beer, Coca-Cola, Fanta, champagne, Pepsi, Retsina, Arak, whiskey, vodka. Ah!
No, that was not Howard Dean. That was one of the most vile individuals of the last century, perhaps one of the worst people in the history of America, worse than Sacco and Vanzetti. The two of them, Leary and Ginsburg, did more to damage more millions of people than any two people in the history of this country. Now, they are lauded by the vermin in the media. Mind you, I saw a series called Summer of Love on the History Channel. Now, I know that the History Channel is owned by NBC, which means that it's a biased left-wing report, which, of course, you'd expect from NBC. They can't do anything right, at least anything American, in my opinion. But I want to focus for a few minutes on the damage that the hippie generation is still doing to America, as exemplified by the hippies who are running the Democrat Party, hippies such as Nancy Pelosi, hippies such as Howard Dean. I can go down the list, and I can tell you that there's a reason for this anti-American, anti-family, anti-military, anti-police madness. I have alluded to this many times on the Savage Nation, and as you know, you can't predict what I'm going to do from one day to the next because I don't really have any predictable patterns, and whatever interests me, I'm going to do. But I intend today to present the case for you to show that there's a distinct connection between the weakness of the West, the decadence of the West, the drug addiction of the West, the homosexualization of the West, the feminization of the West. In other words, the lack of character in the West and the Summer of Love and the vermin who were behind it and the vermin who are now running the media and the government media complex. Now, the best way for me to begin is, again, playing some of the sound of that period. I played for you one of the songs from the period. I think it was called, what was this called? Peace of My Heart, Big Brother in the Holding Company, whatever that was, with Janis Joplin. Now, she's held up as a role model and an icon. She died of a drug overdose. Jimi Hendrix, fine musician, drug overdose. The hippie era, while still held up as a great period of peace and love, was actually a period of the exact opposite. What it did was usher in the death of America as we know it. And I am struggling every day to try to awaken many of you. Some of you are former hippies. Some of you lived through the Summer of Love, whether it was in San Francisco, New York, or Atlanta. It doesn't really matter. And some of you just had a good time. But what you don't know is the Summer of Love was not a spontaneous Summer of Love. The hippie generation was not a spontaneous hippie generation. It was funded. It was paid for, rather, and it was organized by the Communist Party USA and the internationalists who are opposed to our sovereignty. What you don't realize is most of the problems we have today, whether it be crime or drug addiction or abortion or euthanasia or homosexuality as a mainstreaming tool to destroy the family, is all connected to this hippie generation. And the whole struggle going on in America today is between those who would put the final knife into the heart of the animal called America, or the bull called America, or the eagle called America, and those of us who want to kill those who want to kill us. It's as simple as that. It is a struggle for the survival of America. The heart and the soul of America is up for grabs. The vermin on the left have us by the throat. The vermin on the left have us on the ground. The vermin on the left act like they're peace and love. They're the exact opposite of peace and love. They mean to harm the country even further. And I am telling you, there are millions of us. There are more of us than there are of them. The problem is we don't control the media. We don't control the government. In fact, we have no influence over the media, except for a few radio talk shows and an occasional smattering here and there on television of family or American values. You are going to be the people who save this country. It's not going to be me. And it's not going to be where you say, well, what's he talking about? It's all hyperbole. Well, you could say anything you want. The Summer of Love washed across the world. The reason that we are suffering today at the hands of Al-Qaeda, the reason we were struck on September 11, 2001, the reason the USS Cole was bombed with no reaction from Bill Clinton, the hippie, the first hippie president, by the way, is precisely because of the perverted values of the Summer of Love. That's the point I'm trying to make. Now, again, I'm dealing with the Summer of Love, where if you're going to San Francisco, be sure to wear some flowers in your hair. If you're going to San Francisco, summertime will be a love in there. Play that song for the people who don't know what I'm talking about. I'd like them to hear a little bit of the Summer of Love. Right there. This has been popularly seen as a period of love and idealism, when in fact it was a summer of the collapse of American civilization. The History Channel, Our Generation series on the Summer of Love, will show you the opposite. But in fact, what it did was usher in the death of the character of America, which we're still trying to recover from. Wide-scale sexual abandon, leading to STDs, leading to AIDS, leading to drug addiction, leading to the homosexualization and the feminization of our youth, all goes back to the Summer of Love, which began, by the way, during the summer of 1967. Now, what caused all of the excitement was the free sex. And most of the people who hung out in the parks and let their hair grow long and danced around, they were just looking for a little nookie. That's all they wanted. And that's exactly the point I'm trying to make. Sex is one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful, motivator on the planet for most people. It's a given fact going back to the beginning of time. We all understand that. And when sex is permitted to be used like this, it can be used for very, very bad things as well. In the 1930s, following the depression of the late 1920s, the stock market crash, the Communist Party USA made very, very big inroads amongst the working poor and those who were unemployed. And one of the principal methods they had of gaining members in the Communist Party USA amongst longshoremen and amongst workers in general were putting in communist broads into the recruiting halls. Communist dances were announced. The men went and they got free sex. It was free love. They could care less about communism. All they wanted was what men wanted from the beginning of time. But it was the love, the free love, or the sex that was used to hook the people in. And that brings us to today. It's the pornography and the drugs, stupid.
Yeah. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Now, I'm going to ask you again. I'm trying to do something that I think is very fun, a lot of fun today, but also very significant to me. 1960s, Summer of Love, hippie generation, Democrat Party, Nancy Pelosi, all of the so-called values, which are non-values of San Francisco, the anti-American, anti-family, anti-military, anti-police values, if you want to call them that, of the hippie generation have infected most of American society, as exemplified by the valueless San Francisco, where child molesters run free, where children on bicycles can surround a minivan with a mother and children in it and break the van, causing $5,300 worth of damage, and the mayor might arrest the woman in the van for having tapped one of their bicycles and not arresting one of the vandals. Don't you understand what I'm trying to tell you, where this all started and how we came to this breakdown of society? Only by understanding the disease can you begin to cure it. Any doctor will tell you that. The problem with many doctors today is that they are not good diagnosticians. They throw pills at everything without even knowing what they're treating. They're treating symptoms. I am not a man who treats symptoms. I was trained as a holistic practitioner. I am a holistic radio talk show host, if you want to use an old phrase. I am trying to diagnose the disease of American society, and then, and only then, can we hope to get over this disease, this fungus that has infected the body politic of this nation. And there is no greater example of it than Gavin Newsom in San Francisco. Here is a man who looks nice, combs his hair nice, smiles nice. He has no character whatsoever. There's no center to the man. It's like anything goes. Anything goes in this city. That is not freedom, my friends. That's anarchy. That is the road to disaster. When you demoralize a city like this, anything can happen, and it is happening. We have the highest homicide rate per capita in the United States of America, both here in that cesspool called Oakland, California. The police chiefs are impotent. They were selected by mayors who were impotent, and they're put in place to make sure that nothing is done about the crime. And what happens is the mayors are rewarded by being bumped up to a higher position. We can't tolerate this. The country cannot survive unless we step in and throw the corrupt hippie bums out. The country is finished. The worst thing you could do would be elect Obama. What is Obama? Obama is a fiction. He's not a hippie. He's even less than a hippie. He stands for nothing. He is nothing. He is a complete fabrication. He was made up by the media. He's a creation of the media. We can't have a creation. We'll talk about politics later on. Now I'm going to talk about you. I want to hear from you whether you're in San Francisco, New York, Green Bay, Los Angeles. Were you raised by hippies? Or were you a hippie? And how did the period that I am talking about change you or warp you? Do any of you regret what you did in the 60s? Do you think it has still affected you to this day? Let's begin. Let us begin with Dee Dee on KNEW in San Francisco, the epicenter of the meltdown of America's society. Dee Dee, welcome to the Savage Nation. Come before the audience and give us your testament.
I grew up between 6th and 7th on Irving Street in 1967, And I was only 4 at the time, and it was the first time I'd ever experienced the hippie thing that was going on. And I used to walk with my sister over to the children's playground, and it used to be a beautiful park. And one day as I was walking over there, it was full of these dirty, stinky, smelly, god-awful people, and my sister actually had to cover my eyes and run with me to the park because we were being chased by wackos. Fortunately, my parents were wise enough to move me out of there, and I haven't lived there for over 30 years. But it used to be a beautiful city and a safe city at that.
Well, we once had one of the most beautiful parks in the world, Golden Gate Park, but then it was invaded by the perverts who drove the families out. To this day, the perverts rut like sick animals in a certain part of San Francisco's Golden Gate Park. They do it openly. The families will not go into that cesspool of a park where the perverts do this to each other. And the mayor and the police chief look the other way. I understand that. I mean, if you were talking about the age of the reptiles, you couldn't do a better job than talk about San Francisco. The reptiles took over this country. The reptiles have poisoned the nation. The reptiles have morally melted the nation down to make you think that perversion is the norm and the normal people are the perverts. They've melted the country down to the point that you think that the honest straight priest is the enemy. It's unbelievable to me how far we have fallen. It's only men like me, like Samson, trying to hold up the world and we're going to save this country. And you can laugh at me if you want. I don't really care. There are a handful of us left on this planet in the media in particular who can save the country. I'm one of them. There are quite a few of us outside the media, but they're powerless. They don't know what to do. They see what's going on to their children in school. They see how they're brainwashed by the child psychologists, by the NEA, by the Ritalin pushing drug peddlers. They understand what's going on. Mark, WOR, New York, your opinion, please.
I'm a recovering alcoholic and a heroin addict. I was out in San Francisco in 1967. I drove across country from Jersey with a friend of mine by the name of Straight Jacket Jack. It was all about drugs. It was degradation personified. You're right on, Michael.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage. To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
And now on to the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. Debbie, KNEW San Francisco, go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. How do you do? Thank you for taking my call. Dr. Savage, I do suffer from psychological and psychiatric illness, and I denied it for many, many years, having heard stories of my grandmother in New York, who at a mummer's parade had just been released from a psychiatric hospital and was a little too happy, so was returned by black wagon to suffer another round of electroshock therapy. So growing up, when I myself found myself to suffer from similar symptomologies, refused to go get help. And I'll tell you, I do believe that humans, and I find it interesting that rather than recognizing that we do produce very...
All right, so but what is your main point? Of course there's mental illness. There's always been, marginally crazy people and overtly crazy people. We know that. So what is it that we're disagreeing on?
Well, I think it's not subjective, sir. I think that there is a scientific way of producing diagnoses by way of examining common symptomologies and behavior.
Well, it's not that precise. That's the point. And that's where the rub lies. The doctors would have you believe that it's easy to diagnose and definitively diagnose at that mental illness. And I disagree entirely. It's not that easy. Now, I've seen brain scan studies. Don't get me wrong. I've seen the different colorations in schizophrenics and others. But we have no fundamental argument here. In other words, I know there are people who are unstable. I know there are people who are totally crazy. And I know people who are rock steady and never suffer any such orientation. So where the argument arises is, can we control some of these proclivities through means other than medication is the only argument that I think we're having.
Well, I definitely think it can be controlled through medication. The disappointment.
No, you didn't hear me. You see, you went right over what I said. I said, can some of these symptoms or conditions be controlled with means other than medication?
I think it depends to what extent an individual is suffering. In my case, the answer is no. I spent many, many years seeking out. I went to Marin County. I saw the best nutritional therapist, and I wish I could say their names on air.
Did you try mega doses? Well, I'm going to pick one thing out of the air. Did you try massive doses of niacin?
Sir, I tried niacin until my skin was so red, I looked like...
I'm only asking because I want to know how far you went along with nutritional therapies. Of course, they're not going to work in all cases. But you did try Dr. Hoffer's niacin therapy.
I had more niacin in my blood. I went to Oregon. I went to L.A. I had neurosurgery for a very bizarre...
They looked at your iron levels. They looked at your folic acid levels, correct?
Everything. I had more blood panels drawn from me.
You went that route. The route didn't help you, and now you're on major antipsychiatric drugs, and you feel better, correct?
I absolutely feel better, and I've been on
Fine. Well, no one's arguing with that. But I'm saying don't put children on Ritalin the minute they show signs of being a boy.
I absolutely agree with that as well.
All right, so there's no argument. You'll get me crazy if I keep talking to you another three minutes. Three more minutes, I'll need to reach for a pill. 1-800-449-8255. You can get me. You can go crazy from it. I once went and visited a holy man, a religious teacher. He was a former pugilist, a boxer, who then went into religion and became a religious guy. But he still maintained the man of the street. He knew reality. In other words, he didn't come from like an effete background. I was suffering at the time through various things that were going on in my life, mainly societal social engineering that made me feel like a failure because I was not granted what I had earned because they wanted to put people with less qualifications and of other races and of other sexual orientations. Total morons, by the way, given jobs, which is why the university has fundamentally collapsed in America in many departments, certainly not in all. And I was feeling it. I had two young children. I didn't know what was wrong. I killed myself. I did great work. I published my dissertation at a Harvard University journal. I mean, it was pretty good stuff that I did. And they hired whack job moron feminist tree huggers or people from countries of origin other than the United States of America to make them feel good and to look good on the brochures. So I go to see this holy man, and he says to me, what is exactly your problem? And I explain it to him. And he says to me, you know, we have a saying which says that if you take a stick and you put it into a dog, he used the word, I can't say it, let's say dog waste, I'll put it that way on the show. And he says, no matter which way you turn the stick, it's still dog waste. And he said, now, if you don't mind, I have to excuse myself right now. I got very mad at him. I was fuming because I wanted some mystical experience in this holy man's office. He told me if you take a stick and you put it in, you know what, and no matter how you move the stick around, it's still you know what. What he was telling me is stop moving the stick around and you know what. And he was right. See, so there are many ways to cure problems. They're not all medicatable. Not everything needs medication. Sometimes common sense works. That's what I'm trying to tell you, is that there's an epidemic of loss of common sense. An epidemic of loss of common sense. We have a nation of ninnies. Everyone walks around, medication. I want my medication. I want my crutch. I want my drug. I want my medication. I want Uncle Sam to pay my medication. I'm sickly. I want my drug. Well, maybe you need your drug and maybe you don't. Maybe you're just a weak individual who refuses to take control of your own life. You know, you have diabetes and you're still eating Krispy Kreme. I wouldn't give you medication. I'd make you pay for your medication if you refuse to modify your diet. And you want me to pay for your diabetic treatment, for your treatment for diabetes, and so forth and so on. If you're not willing to help yourself, why should I help you? That's why our taxes are out of control in this country. But more than that, psychiatry is often used as mind control, societal control in our country. And I want to make a very big political point now because we're moving very, very close to the ex-Soviet Union where psychiatrists were used to diagnose people who were antisocial or antipolitical. They were then taken away by the secret police, medicated into submission, and thrown into re-education camps. If you think we're not moving in that direction, my friend, you are mistaken. Some well-meaning psychiatrists are this far away from recommending that political dissidents in this country not be medicated. Trust me on this. I'm sure it's being discussed. that anyone who suffers this phobia or that phobia can only be treated with major pharmaceuticals. And I can guarantee you, as I sit here, that it's going to come from the homosexual radical community, that Christians who believe in the Word of God are psychiatrically impaired by definition, and they should be medicated, and they should be reeducated. That is the only way to cure them of their God, of their God madness. I can guarantee you it's being whispered in psychiatric halls. So don't tell me I don't see what's coming in this country unless you stand up to this juggernaut of the medico-legal profession, the medico-pharmaceutical legal profession, because they're all intimately involved. Now, that's not to throw away all of medicine. That would be foolish. And I've never said that. That would be a ridiculous thing to say. I'm talking about integrative medicine, where all of these modalities are work together. You don't jump to one or the other. That would be like saying, oh, let's never use drugs and let's only use dietetics. That's absurd in most cases. So don't think that I'm a zealot in one area. But I don't want to be led around by the nose and to believe that there are no effects upon mind and body other than those that can be cured by drugs. The drug establishment is out of control in its power over the mind of the people. Take a look at the Viagra ads. I turned on Fox, CNN, MSNBC. I flipped around at 15 minutes after the hour all day. All I saw was a white-haired man dancing a woman around on a floor with a big smile as they left to the hotel room and said, Viagra, Viagra, Viagra. Every channel at 15 after the hour. Every man needs Viagra over the age of 40, according to the advertisements. Could it be that the man is impotent? Excuse me, erectile dysfunctional because he really doesn't want to have sex because he's not in heat? We are the only animal on earth who is deluded by our societal images and pressures into thinking that we should be, wow, I'm raring to go 365 days a year. I can spring up like a 15-year-old. I'm a potent man. There's no animal on earth that is potent 365 days a year. We're the only animal who's been deluded into thinking we should be. So now we medicate the fact that we're not attracted to the woman, we're out of sync with the desire, or we shouldn't be having sex at all right now. Why must a man have sex 365 days a year? Where have you read an animal that has sex 365 days a year? It's unheard of.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
My dream of a lodge. My dream of a lodge, because it's summer, you know, everyone I know is going somewhere. They're like children. They have a vacation, and I don't. Boo-hoo. I mean, I could have a vacation if I wanted. I could just take time off, but I have nowhere I really like to go. Say, well, why don't you like to go? A, I don't like crowds. B, I don't like the places I go to. I can't sleep, blah, blah, blah. So then I'm thinking, what would I really, really like? And I'm thinking what I'd like is a lodge that I own, mind you, let's say 4,000 or 5,000 feet, alpine flora. It doesn't have to be 5,000 feet. It could be 6,000 feet. I would like it in the state of Washington. I'm fantasizing now. Somewhere on Mount Rainier, I would assume. I don't know if there's any such private lodge available, whether it's not all state-owned or federal. And I'd like to have it with an owner's room or dwelling on it as well. And I would, have a retreat for myself that I'd go to. I'd broadcast from up there with a special broadcast studio, and the guests could watch me broadcast through, a partition, and they would enjoy the normal facilities of a lodge. The food would be great. The drinks, the bar would be great. And it would be conservatives only. I mean, I would make sure liberals couldn't get in there. I would exclude them. I wouldn't let them in. And anyone who behaves too liberally, we throw them out. That's all. Throw them out of the bar. I know a guy who owns a restaurant out in Inverness, California. I love this guy. He really knows what communism brings. He skied out of Czechoslovakia when the Soviets took it over in 57. He was a world-class skier. So he went up over one of the mountains and skied into Austria and escaped. Well, he owns a lodge out there. I haven't seen him in years. A great man, wonderful man. I'll never forget, I went into his place, I don't know, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. I don't know when. Time moves on so quickly. And I had my dog. He has a wonderful little old lodge, and he cooks the food himself. And so I had my dog. I said, well, I guess I can't bring it in. He says, yeah, you can bring it in. He says, he's better than most of the customers out here. Bring him in. So I said, well, I'll keep him. He says, no, put him up on a stool. He said, here, give him a bowl of water on the bar. He didn't care about an inspector. So I started to like this guy, and I went back there once on a crowded Sunday in the winter, and he had a roaring fire like a European inn. The food was, you know, bountiful and heavy, you know, high cholesterol, but delicious once in a while, the heavy, wonderful meats and this and that. So he used to walk around and talk to the customers and engage them in a bellowing voice. And he said to one of the guys who was there he didn't like, he said, well, what do you do for a living? You work for the Bank of America, he said. He said, get out of my restaurant. I don't want a user in here. He threw him out of the restaurant with his party of four people. He didn't care what the bill was. They had wine and dinners. He didn't want the payment. He said, well, let me pay. I don't want you to pay. I don't want your dirty money. He was that kind of guy. I loved him. I hope he's still living. I haven't been out in there in a while. Saddle, Washington. Jason, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Mike, when you're looking for that lodge in around Mount Rainier, make sure you stay away from Enumclaw, right?
That's the animal sex area, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, let me ask you, you're from Seattle. Are there lodges like this on Mount Rainier that are not government-owned or state-owned?
The only lodges I know about, Mike, are the pink ones. I don't know any of the ones probably you're looking for.
Oh, it's full of pinkos up there?
Oh, yeah, it's pinko country.
Oh, how disgusting. They took over everything. It's like a gigantic nudist camp to them. The whole country is a place to just debase themselves in. Thank you for the call. 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. I know that number in the middle of the night. And the website's michaelsavage.com. I'm going to go slow today. I'm going to float like a butterfly and sting like a bee. Thank you very much, Muhammad Ali. That's how I feel. It's summertime. The pace changes. It always does. If you know my show, in the summer I slow down a little. I have a different pace of a show because, a lot of the people are on vacation, number one. They're not listening. And number two, if you're listening to me and you're already on vacation and your tempo is slowed down, I slow down slightly. And it's a little, in certain ways, more enjoyable. So I don't burn at my normal frenetic pace. But for me, that's 190% of the average talk show host anyway. WOR, New York, Matt, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, hi. Listen, I agree with you about that lodge up there in like Seattle or something like that, but I'll tell you where you really want to look maybe is like around to the west of Kelso on the Lewis and Clark Trail. If you go west towards Astoria, the mountain views are just stunning. They're beautiful. And
no, but Matt, here's the thing. I'm not looking for mountain views. Why do you think I picked an alpine area? Because I'm a highly allergic individual. In an alpine environment, there's much less pollen. And the chances of me having a pollen-free spring would be great at an alpine level because it's usually sort of in a snowpack until July. You know what I mean?
I'll tell you what, Mike. If you ever open one up, you let me know. I'll be your first customer.
I know. No. I got a lot of hundreds of thousands of people would want to be there. And I know exactly what it would look like. I can sense the menu. I know exactly what it'd be like. I get chefs who would want to work at this place just to be around the customers. It'd be a great place to have. But, you know, I don't know if anything like this exists. The reason I don't want it in upstate New York is because I want an alpine altitude. I want the alpine flora. I keep repeating that over and over again. A real alpine flora. Remember, I'm a trained botanist, so I know what I'm saying. When I say alpine flora, I know what I'm speaking about. I'd like to move into the semi-ice age, you know, come the spring and summer. Maybe Idaho. I don't know if there's alpine lodges. Again, I'm going to get a lot of people offering me places for sale, like in Monticello, New York, owned by a Hasidim. I don't want that. I don't want a bungalow colony with an old casino. Mike, I got a place for you for sale in Hurleyville. You can't believe it's beautiful. It's run down a little alpine schmalpine. We'll paint pictures on the wall for your little snow. You'll think you're in alpine New York. No, I say alpine, real alpine, genuine alpine, not the Red Apple Rest, not the Jewish Catskills. I want alpine. Then I'll, you know what? I'll bring a polka band up there. I'm having a whole fantasy. They'd come up in the outfits. It would be what fun we would have. Finally, at this point in my life, is to bring them up there and have it all run the way I want it run properly. Just the great place. You know, it's a dream. I mean, it's very hard to pull this off. Very hard to get what you really want in life. You have to learn is to take what you can get, not what you want. And then you realize what you really want and what you can get are two different things. And what you want and what you need are three different things. That's the most important rule an adult can learn, is the differential between what you want and what you need. What a big thing that is. And do you really need what you have? No. But we all have more than we need. That's why the some of the problems are occurring. We all know that. It's not that we're greedy. It's human nature, I suppose, to want three cars or four when you really only need, let's say, one or two. Everyone has a little collectible. I do. I have the old Caddy. I don't need it. It's a pain in the neck. It stinks. No matter what I do, it stinks and rots in the garage. I don't know what to do with it. I had it in last 2 weeks ago, again, dripping and leaking after the seal. The guy spent 3 weeks ago, Dave, and then he finally found that the main seal was dripping, a little 25-cent. So I said, oh, great, it won't stink in the garage anymore. So I buy a new pan, put it in the garage, a reek in there, it smells like a funeral parlor, like Nyberg's funeral parlor next door with the old Cadillacs. I mean, if you like garage smells, that's great, but when it's in your house, it's not so great. You know, it's not like a grease rack there. So I may have to sell the old car. I can't stand it anymore, the stink. Now, what do I need it for, the 19? Because I don't want to let it go, you know? Like, there it is again. What, do I need it? No. Do I have it? Yes. What do I actually need? Like the wise man once said to me when things were not going well in my life, and I was complaining to him that, you know, despite the hard work and the books and the PhD, and I'm not complaining to you, I can't get a teaching job because I'm a white male, and they're only hiring minorities and women, even though I had a straight-A average. He said, well, don't get so worried about it. He said, see the universe as it is. I said, what are you talking about? He said, what does a man really need? I said, I don't know. What does a man really need? He says, a man really needs a desk, a lamp, a chair, and a toilet. Okay, that reduces it to the basics. I mean, if that's how you want to live, a desk, a chair, a lamp, and a toilet, meaning a man only needs a book to study, a place to study properly in, and to use his mind thinking about, you know, the holy book. I understand from his point of view. I would add a few other things if you wanted to do a bare bones thing, like a desk, a lamp, a chair, a toilet. How about a wife? Would that help a little bit or not? That he forgot that part of the puzzle? Or else you're not going to sit too long in the chair with the lamp and the desk and the book if your mind is wandering every 3 seconds.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
You know, people are trying to silence Michael Savage. That's me. I need your help. It's a big battle, a legal battle. The opposition has unlimited funds. I don't. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com, contribute $5, $10, $1,000, $10,000. You'll notice that you can contribute to the Legal Defense Fund under a new address. The mail goes to the Michael Savage. That's if a check, a money order, cash. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor. San Francisco 94111. Thank you for helping protect freedom of speech. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. And God bless you for helping protect freedom of speech.
Savage.
Can I ask you something? Do you eat in chain restaurants, anybody? Does anyone eat in chain restaurants anymore? I did last night. I had it. I love it. They don't know me. There's all young people, very cheerful. The girls all have like little earrings, like 4 or 5 earrings on their lobe, which means they're nymphos. But they're not, you know what it is? There's something about young people in a chain restaurant who are so eager to please. Probably molested as a youth, but they serve well. You get the bread right away, the beer. I ate in that chain, that back out. I like it a lot, that Aussie chain. You know why? I'll tell you why I like it. A, no one knows me, which I love. The only thing I don't like is the lamp over the table. I feel like I'm in a 50s Dragnet movie. Like, where were you on the night of the fourth? You know, it blinds you. Who created that? I don't like a light in the top of my eye when I'm trying to eat. But if you order a 7-ounce steak, you get a 7-ounce steak. And where can you get a baked sweet potato anymore in a restaurant? They don't have them. And no butter, you get no butter. Broccoli, no butter, no butter. I liked it. I swill beer. I sit there. There was one table with a crying child. I only had to move twice. Look, you're in life. You're going to hear a child screaming. And I don't hate children. Don't get me wrong. I say to them, because the young kids don't understand. If you say to them, look, the kid's making noise. I'd like to move. They think you don't like kids. It's not like I don't like children. I say to them, look, I raise children. I love them, but I work very hard. When I come for dinner, I can't listen to them. Okay, I understand. Particularly the nymphos with the four earrings. They seem to understand that better than the boys. They don't even understand what I just said. The ones with the four or five little stud earrings in the lobe who clean up for the job during the day, it's a shame. Look what they have to do while they work before they go back to the pawn that night. Well, they're cleaning up. I don't know why they're in there. But the point is, I don't mind a chain restaurant. That one I like of all the chains, the only one I really like. There's an Italian chain that isn't bad if you can control the cooks. Okay, I said enough on it. Now, I got to tell you something else. I went to a Thai restaurant for lunch. I'm going to tell you about a dog and a shrimp for a minute because of King Shrimp, Prawn, Thai Airlines. I'm thinking about a shrimp a lot lately. I figured if it's good enough for a child molester, I should try him again. Because I have a rough thing with shrimp. It's on and off with me and shrimp. You can't trust them in the summer particularly. And even in the winter, you know, the Jewish prohibitions against shrimp were not bad. The Muslims picked that up pretty good. They were smart. I don't think the Amish eat them either. Well, what do you get up there anyway in the Pennsylvania country except corn? Corn and wheat, things, wheat-based products. You can't get a shrimp up there. It's not a bad prohibition. Shrimp are iffy. They're a very iffy creature. I happen to like them. Now, Teddy, my dog, loves shrimp. He loves them if I cook them and I don't spice them, no nothing on them. Then I cool it off in a glass of water and I give it to him, loves it, knocks it down. Now, listen to what happened. This is an important story. It's a test. It's like the canary in the cave. I'm in the Thai restaurant for lunch. I'm itching now. I had to put a lotion on my forearms from the lunch, which is not a good sign. I got a little itch on both forearms, which is the first sign of something contaminated, some taint. And I take him. They let me sit on the outside deck, the dog. So I go there. That's one of the main reasons I go. I order the dish, the fisherman's dish. And I didn't like the smell of the seafood. It's presented nicely, but right away there was a slight off smell. You know, seafood, you can smell it immediately if you still have enough. And I do. I have great, great olfactory sense. But I eat it anyway. See, here's the thing about me. Why did I eat it anyway? Because, A, I paid for it. B, I was hungry. And C, I figured, all right, it wasn't that bad. And I don't have that much willpower to send it back. And I don't want to start in with the sending back number three. Now, here's the trick. I eat all the shrimp, but he's looking. I said, Teddy, I can't feed you. I told you it's Thai food when we came here. And you knew it was too spicy, so he didn't even beg. But toward the end, he lost his composure and asked for something. And I couldn't resist because he was a good boy, slept under the table. So what did I do? I dipped the shrimp in water. Or whatever was on it came off. And I gave it to him. You know what he did? He wouldn't eat it. But here's the funny part. He rolled on it. I never saw him do this. He would not eat the shrimp. Rejected it, probably because it was tainted and tricked up by the Thais in that restaurant. And here's the strange part. He like mushed it on his head, all over his fur. So I reach down and say, what are you doing? Why are you rolling it? And he gives me a growl, like he doesn't know me, because I try to take his shrimp away. The only thing I could figure out is that the shrimp gave off like a scent of a dog, a woman dog, a girl dog. And he like fell in love with it. He was trying to make love to a shrimp on the ground. He only was mushing it up all over his head, his ears and his eyes, and it's all over his fur, and I try to give him. I don't like when they give you the white eye. When those little nice dogs, all of a sudden they give you a white eye, it can be frightening. They can rip your hand off. Normally he's a nice boy, doesn't. So I said, what are you, crazy? I gave you the shrimp. Why are you growling at me? Look at the crazy eyes. So I mushed it aside. The fly ate it. It wasn't that bad. A fly ate it at least. I got to tell you, maybe if there's another chain restaurant I could eat in tonight, I'm going to go. No more of the, hey, Mike, how you doing? Pasta, bada, 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 boom, ba, ba, ba. Hey, Mike. I don't need a free meal. I don't want a free meal. And I don't need any friends in the restaurant business. They wind up treating a tourist off the street, by the way, better than they do people they know. That's a peculiar thing, you know. You ever see that? Like you're an old-time customer. And I'm a celebrity to top it off that talks about food. I don't mean they treat me badly, but they get a guy off the street from like Redwood City or they never saw before. They cater to them more than people they know. What is that all about? What are you, like a given? You're like someone that they know they own, so there's this one that would build a new customer base? I don't know. To me, you got to treat your customer base right. See, the Republicans ought to think of it as a restaurant. If the Republicans treated the American electorate as customers in a restaurant, they can't do it. It's not in the WASP culture. They don't even understand food. You know, mayonnaise and white bread and a Diet Coke isn't exactly cuisine. Probably with a barbecue or something. So if you say to a WASP, like in the Republican Party, to treat the electorate as you would in a restaurant there, what would their model be? Like IHOP, so it wouldn't work, or like McDonald's or Jack in the Box? I don't think that would work, that model. A sane politician, though, would treat the electorate as if the electorate were customers in their restaurant. Now, what does that mean? Well, what I mean by that is this. Think about what I'm about to tell you. Let's say the Republicans were dying like a miserable death because of the mishandling of everything, the worst public relations, and they have an image problem you can't believe. What an image problem. And they mistreat their customer base. The customer base told them for 6 years now, we elected you to be conservative, not compassionate. So stop with the malarkey with compassion already, particularly compassion for our enemy, compassion for illegal aliens from Mexico. Let's start with conservatism for our enemy and conservatism to the illegal aliens from Mexico. So then we get more gushy, mushy compassion. So the base needs to be treated like customers in a restaurant who have been eating there for a number of years. And what you do is you serve your base better than you do going out for new customers. Because if you lose your base, then no matter how many new customers you get, you're going to go out of business.
Yeah.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
An encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Michael Savage is now going to read White Male Inventions, originally published in 1999 and then reprinted, really, in The Savage Nation. White Male Inventions are trains, planes, cars, rockets, telescopes, tires, telephones, radios, television, electricity, atomic energy, computers, and fax machines, all miracles made possible by the minds and spirits of men with names like Ampere, Bell, Caselli, Edison, Ohm, Faraday, Einstein, Cohen, Teller, Shockley, Hertz, Marconi, Morse, Popov, Ford, Volta, Michelin, Dunlop, Watt, Diesel, Galileo, and other dead white males. All reports indicate that we live in the most wonderful society on earth, but few understand how this happened. I hate to disappoint my friends on the radical left, but it has nothing to do with Bonnie and Clyde Clinton or the Democrat Party, or with any other party for that matter. What I'm about to say is tantamount to blasphemy in this politically correct day and age, yet truth is truth. How long are we going to pretend that origins play no role in our world, the origins of the inventions, science, technology, and economics of the world in which we live? Our present economic boom, well, at the time there was, right now we're still living through great technological booms, is due to the revolution in electronics and computer technology. But saying this is not enough, for these things didn't just spring into existence by themselves. They have traceable origins. And all of our booms throughout history have the same origins as this one. It's no mystery. Just look at the list of names in your history books and their national origins. The great majority of booms, past and present, have been brought about by the genius and inventiveness of that most despicable of genders, the dreaded white male, or to be exact, by specific individual white males. This is not to discredit the many contributions coming from non-whites, but fact is fact. Our most important and consequential inventions have come almost exclusively from white males. Curse me or all white males if you wish. That changes nothing. But if you call me a liar, you'll have to come up with the proof that I'm wrong. Remember, I didn't say there were no important contributions by non-whites. I said the overwhelming majority. Of course, I know about such things as the Chinese and gunpowder. But they didn't take it much beyond firecrackers and pyrotechnics. And I know about the pyramids and masonry of South America and the zero of the Arabs. Would we have atomic physics and electricity if it hadn't been for the ancient Greek philosophers who, for example, had the idea that all matter consists of tiny atoms? Aristotle, 5th century BC, used electric charges to treat gout. Archimedes perceived the center of gravity of solids, cylinders, and spheres. From the basic discoveries of Greek civilization, it went to the Romans, and after the fall of Rome, it passed to later Europeans who expanded on the scientific knowledge. In modern times, these ideas were developed by such Europeans as Volta, Ampere, Watts, Bell, Edison, and Einstein, who provided the basis for most of the technical wonders of today. All of them dreaded white males. Maybe you got your enlightenment from one of the Ivy League institutions of diseducation. Maybe they taught you that it's all the result of white racism and oppression, that every time a potential Einstein, Edison, or Ford popped up in the third world, a white hit squad would swoop down and eliminate him before he had a chance to prove himself. Or maybe their schools refused to teach him in the Ebonics of his day. Or maybe they didn't have proper daycare facilities. Or maybe our would-be innovator came from a dysfunctional family. But the facts tell us that many of the great men pursued their genius at great personal risk, like the astronomer Galileo, who proved that the Earth revolves around the sun. He and other men of genius and courage refused to be suppressed, even if it meant their lives. They would permit no race, gender, group, or class to keep them from their pursuit of truth and excellence, whatever the cost. If you eliminate, suppress, or debase the white male, you kill the goose that laid the golden egg. If you ace him out with affirmative action, exile him from the family, teach him that he's a blight on mankind, then bon voyage to our society. We will devolve into a cesspool. Where has there ever before in history been a group of human beings who have brought about the likes of the Magna Carta, the U.S. Constitution, and the countless life-saving and life-improving inventions that we now enjoy? Now, it is certainly true that China did lead the world in technology and commercial inventiveness about 1,000 years ago. They had great coal mining operations, gunpowder, six-masted sailing ships, and intense commercial enterprise. But it all collapsed because the elites, the long-nailed mandarins, centralized control 1,000 years before Mao Zedong and crushed the expansion and inventions of China. Does this mean we should sit back and let ourselves be governed by someone just because he's a white male? Of course it doesn't. It means simply that we shouldn't suppress anyone, including white males. Let our God-given gifts run freely in a free and just society, free from the oppression and tyranny of social engineers. If anyone has gifts beyond our own, be a white male or other, be grateful. Maybe we have gifts that in some small way can contribute something of value as well. One way or another, we're all in the same boat. Few of us have truly outstanding gifts. And most of us have to humbly accept that there are others around who are more gifted than we are. In a democratic society, it's not for Big Brother or Big Sister to decide who shall thrive and who shall struggle in the hive. Michael Savage, 1999. It appears in the Savage Nation. Many of you responded to that. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. The website is michaelsavage.com. We go to the callers now, New York City, WOR. Bunny, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Your reading was masterful. You sent me a copy of your book after our conversation, and hearing it from your lips, it impacts me even greatly. The question is the hypocrisy that is overtaking America. I live in your Upper West Side in a building with seven-figure apartments. Everyone here is so left, they're off the planet. Their kids are all in private school. You never see anybody on the subway. They all have car services. Mm-hmm. And they want open borders and open everything.
So, Bunny, let me ask you, do these fine pink people understand what happens with their political wants, what happens as a result of their political wants? Do they see Zimbabwe in their future?
No, they feel that we should have compassion and give people opportunities. And there's one young woman in the neighborhood, five kids from five different men, and she says none of the men has ever seen his son, but I love to be pregnant. I'm going to have more babies.
Does she live in the building in one of the seven-figure apartments?
She works in the neighborhood. And then she goes to a city council meeting and says, I need more space. You must give me bigger apartment. And they
went. Well, a society collapses when you have a society where everyone can vote. Let me be very clear about this, including people on welfare. The society devolves into a communistic society. I have said for years, Bunny, that if you are receiving public assistance, you should lose the right to vote during that period because you're only going to vote yourself a raise. And that means you're going to ask those of us who work to give it to you when you don't work. It does not make sense to give people the vote who are on welfare. If they regain a living, give them back the vote. No, sir. Now that's why we're falling apart, and that's why the politicians keep pandering to the lowest common denominator, Bunny. You know that's true.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
The National Academy of Sciences, so-called, came out in the morning and said that the Earth is the warmest it's been in 400 years. Then by the end of the day, they said it's the warmest it's been in 1,000 years. And by midnight, they corrected it and said it's the warmest it's been in 2,000 years. And it's all because of us, mankind, and that the science is in. That's rubbish. Many scientists disagree. And what the other scientists are doing are looking at snapshots, not the whole moving picture. Now, one of the chief scientists that I listen to is a professor and geographer named Harm de Blij, B-L-I-J, who wrote a book called Geography Matters. And he is speaking about global warming and cooling. Please listen to clip 28.
It got even warmer without our help in the Eemian than it is today. Sea level was 15 feet higher at the top of the Eemian than it is today. And it is an uncomfortable truth that if you take a look at those graphs, there's a very good chance we will be facing that again, whether or not we contribute to the pollution of the atmosphere.
Whether or not we contribute to the pollution of the atmosphere. I hope you understand that. And we're just in the middle of a cycle that's getting hotter. Now, so listen to 24.
About 25 million years ago, glaciers begin to form in the highlands, even in the tropics, in New Guinea, in the Andes, Kilimanjaro. About 12 million years ago, the Arctic Ocean freezes over and stayed frozen over. And then, in a period, a time frame called the Pliocene, there is a plunge of temperatures from about 6 to about 1.8 million years ago, when that incredible cooling came close to wiping out humanity of the primates, our common ancestors, but survived in Africa, not in Eurasia. And then 1.8 million years ago, it has been cold like this for 100,000 years. Then the temperature rises precipitously. Well, that's not a very good word. Suddenly, up to warm conditions of the kind we're experiencing today, that warm period tends to last somewhere between 8 and 13,000 years. Then there is an equally precipitous drop, and it is cold again. Now, notice these glaciations that are happening here have their kind of warm intervals as well. But then there's another one of these warm periods, and then it drops again. This has happened now about 18 times over the past 1.8 million years.
Now, I understand many of you can't follow it or don't want to follow it. I also understand many of you are college-educated or reasonably well-educated on your own and can follow it. It's common sense. This is not too complicated. Now, we then go on to Professor de Blij's discourse that I think is fascinating. Listen to 26.
Just 18,000 years ago, and I know this is not news to anyone in this audience, ice stood as far south as the Ohio River. My house in Cape Cod would not have survived. And it came down very quickly, and it receded very quickly. The reason the United States is the breadbasket it is because those glaciers scoured rock in Canada into the finest powder imaginable, shoved it all into our Midwest, and then the ice retreated, leaving us with some of the Earth's most fertile soils. I'm surprised the Canadians haven't demanded reparations. This is where all this fertility came from.
See, he's the kind of science professor that I loved. First of all, he's knowledgeable. Secondly, he can explain it in common terms that we can understand. And he's basing it upon real evidence, which he was showing there. I'm going to leave out the real science behind what he's saying. This is not opinion. You can say it's theory based upon evidence. Let's put it to you that way. But it certainly counters the absurdity of the National Academy of Sciences that we're the hottest in 400 years and we did it. Now, go on to 27.
Just when it looked as though Europe was going to get itself organized, that its wealth and its cities were going to become the centers of democratic governments, has already begun to happen in Iceland and one or two other northern places, the climatic roof fell in. And in a matter of not generations, but years, Europe was transformed. The agricultural frontier, which was in Scandinavia and included Iceland, there was settlement in Greenland. Greenland wasn't called Greenland for fun. It was called Greenland because it was a green tip of a very cold place. And then all of a sudden, climate switched over. It had to have to do something with the thermal halon circulation in the ocean and north Atlantic Ocean, obviously. But in any case, what happened was, priests prayed with their congregations at the faces of glaciers advancing out of the alpine valleys, gobbling up villages and churches and farms and fields. It was as many a diary I have read, because wine growers were keeping diaries in those days, because they, more than anybody else, were sensitive to climate change. They all wrote and said it was like lava coming out of a volcano. That's how glaciation impacts.
So it happened rapidly. It changed the face of Europe. And so what we may be going through now is another rapid change, and now we're going to a hot phase, and we could see real hot temperatures that are going to change the face of humanity. I don't doubt that we will. But for God's sakes, can we stop being primitives about it? Gore is sort of a priest of a gospel of lies, that we did it. This is part of the narcissism of the liberal, who thinks that he does everything. It's like a baby who makes doo-doo in his diaper and says doo-doo. Al Gore is saying, in essence, we made the doo-doo, and we're suffering as a result of it. Only we could do it. He doesn't understand that we have almost nothing to do with the change, the climactic change that we're going through right now. It's, again, a form of egomania that the liberal, of course, relates to, because they live in a world of narcissism and egomania, where only they can affect things. Not God, certainly, and not nature. They're better, and they're more supreme. Do you understand the psychopathology of the liberal? And why I said liberalism is a mental disorder, it's even affecting their view of climate change. Now, I am giving you a lesson that you could get nowhere else. I don't believe that what I'm doing for you in the last 5 minutes could be done at any university in America today, not only because it wouldn't be done, but it couldn't be done. I'm giving you a nugget on global warming in this segment that you have found nowhere else. You won't find it anywhere else. It's worth everything on earth. It's going to enlighten you and give you a power and a strength that you don't you understand that knowledge is power? But we're living through a kind of mass hysteria in the United States of America and in the West in general. A mass hysteria that we're evil, that we're no good. They won't blame the Islamo-fascists for what they're doing. It's our fault. They won't accept the fact that it may not be our fault that we're going through a hot spell or a warm spell. Again, it's our fault, the evils of the West. Don't you see how it all ties in to the mass hysteria of the illiberal left? Don't you see that this is an emotional reaction that ties into the psychopathology of the liberal or the leftist? Now let's go on to 29. This is the most important segment of all.
We are now contributing to a worsening of the global warming that nature probably had in store for us anyway. And as you know, really the only question is the degree of anthropogenic warming that we're adding to the natural warming. So perhaps you've been reading in the scientific literature, there was a great article in Science the other day about intensification of solar radiation. Apparently we're going through flares and hotter time. And we're adding this enormous pollution to the atmosphere, which of course has now so enhanced the greenhouse effect that we don't know what lies in store. Let me just suggest this. The atmosphere has been polluted, has been filled with carbon dioxide in the past to a far greater degree than is the case today, and has come back and cleansed itself after continental drift, thousands of volcanoes, after the impact in 72,500 years ago when humanity was nearly wiped out by a volcano in Indonesia called Toba. Take a look at Toba on your computer sometime. You will learn some amazing things. It probably cost us incredible human diversity, gene diversity, and almost wiped us out. The atmosphere apparently was completely covered in soot for 17 years, but repaired itself. After the asteroid impact in Yucatan, surely there was no chance that the atmosphere would recover, and it did.
You hear all of this? Do you hear the brilliance of the simplicity tied together here? This is like the verbal brushstrokes of a master. And I've always known, ever since I was a young science student, that the full professor who knew what he was talking about always explained things in ways that I could understand it and the other children could understand it who wanted to learn, and that the assistant professor would cover the blackboard with data and drawings and diagrams, and he would say things and tell you to study and memorize, and you were going to get a test, and you didn't understand anything, and that is because the assistant professor was an ignoramus who didn't understand the topic himself, that only the full professor truly understood, the good ones, what he was talking about, and usually could explain it in simple terms, which, of course, this is how I learned to be a great communicator, or from the great professors that I had, and I had some really good ones. I had great high school teachers in my day at Jamaica High School in Queens. In those days, I had really some great teachers. And so, therefore, talk radio in some ways, although it's a medium of entertainment, it's also potentially a medium of great learning, whether you know it or not. And this edutainment that we have here is a golden, golden opportunity to please stop being superstitious about what's going on here. Please stop supporting the absurdity that we're so important that we're killing ourselves by driving our cars. This is rubbish, pure rubbish. Hysteria ties right into the psychopathology of the liberal mindset, which is, of course, obsessed with its own power and importance.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
I had no arthritis in my life. I'm not 30 years old. I had no arthritis ever in my whole life. Nothing. Zero. My back is perfect, thank God. Not an arthritic joint. I took Lipitor for 2 weeks. My left hand hasn't worked properly since. Do you know that I discontinued a week ago? It's unbelievable. Do you not want to hear what's working? The joints are very sore. My thumb is my opposable thumb hardly works. I can't lift weights. It's hard for me to ride a bicycle. It's unbelievable what that drug did to me. So listen to this. Nothing worked on the joints. They would pop. It was hard for me to open the hand. The thumb still hurts. Do you know what broke the popping? Took down the swelling? Homeopathy, a homeopathic ointment called Arnica, which I've known about for 30 years. Remember, I wrote a book on homeopathy 30 years ago. So you say, well, what do you mean homeopathy? What is that? That's crackpot. Yeah, it's crackpot. It's all crackpot. What I love about the liberals is that everything in alternative medicine they consider wrong and crackpotty, they've all become super, super establishmentarians. Have you noticed this, that the liberals are super establishmentarians, and it's the hardcore conservatives who are very into the alternative medical world and into individualism and individual rights? Have you noticed this change in American society? I'm a keen observer of American society. I don't know if you understand that actually talk radio, if it's good, is about social commentary. I don't know if you understand that. And it is. You have to be a pretty good social analyst to survive in this business. Anyone could do politics. You know, they read the 18 papers in the morning, and the next thing is they're a great pundit that evening or that morning. Or read this, a pundit. That's easy to do. That's baby talk and talk radio. It's the social commentary and weaving it together in a political format that makes for interesting talk radio. Nobody can beat me at it. Nobody. Nobody. I'm the super heavyweight champion of social commentary and radio. Nobody comes near me. Ask anyone who listens. I don't care if they're my detractor. They know I'm better than anybody. But what I'm getting at is, have you noticed that liberals laugh at herbal medicine? They laugh at homeopathy. They laugh at nutrition. They're all gung-ho, all of a sudden, AMA establishment medicine. How did that happen? That only conservatives, we conservatives,
understand the value of complementary medicine, which is what it was once called, or alternative medicine, which is what it was once called. How can we understand it in the so-called liberals who are into liberalism and freeing themselves, do not free themselves of the yoke of modern medicine? How come? You have an answer to that one? Because I do, and I understand it very well. I know very well. Here, remember 2 weeks ago I said to you that autism is a phony disease? Do you remember I said that to you? That how could so many children suddenly be an autism epidemic? In my day, if a kid was a troublemaker, he was a troublemaker. If he shot his mouth off in a classroom, he wasn't called autistic. He was called a pain in the neck. They sent him to a special school for pains in the neck. Now he needs medication. He's got autism. Today they've redefined a troublesome children. And now they're calling them autistic all of a sudden. They all have a syndrome. First of all, a lot of it is a racket to collect disability payments from the government, from basically poorer families who found a new way to be parasites on the government, which is if you want to collect a little money and get free medical care and you want to get the kid to take tests with help, where the answers are given to him before he takes it, just say he's got an illness, ADD, DDD, ASA. To me, there was one disease that they all have. It's called STUPID. That's the main illness most of these kids have. Now you say, well, where do you come up with this? That is so cruel of you, Michael. Guess what? I was right again. MSNBC, which is a super left-wing website, has a new article out called Autism Epidemic May Be All in the Label. You hear this? Do you hear this finally again confirmed? Savage was right again. Dateline Atlanta by Mike Stobie, Associated Press. A few decades ago, people probably would have said kids like Ryan Massey and Eddie Shuplin were just odd or difficult. Both boys are bright, but Ryan 11 is hyper and prone to angry outbursts. Hey, the kid's a born talk radio show. Sometimes trying to strangle another kid in his class who annoys him. Maybe he's a born martial artist. Eddie 7 has a strange habit of sticking his shirt in his mouth and sucking on it. He's an idiot. That's a different story. Prone to angry outbursts and hyper means he's probably going to be a good, either a lawyer or a good talk show host. Sometimes trying to strangle another kid, he's got to control it. He'd probably be a good martial artist or a good ring fighter. The brother, though, hopeless. Sticking his shirt in his mouth and sucking on it, finished. Nothing will help him. Give him as many shirts as he wants. Both were diagnosed with a form of autism. And it's probably because of children like them that autism appears to be skyrocketing. The latest estimate is that 1 in 150 children have some form of this. That's bullcrap. There's not that many children. What it is, it's a racket. It's the drug companies trying to sell a disease. And the American Academy of Pediatrics, I got to tell you, the sickest doctors in the country is the American Academy of Pediatrics. They want every child screened by the age of 2. Put them on this, put them on that. See, there was a time that pediatricians were the lowest earning doctors in the constellation of MDs because they didn't prescribe drugs. Then they got the idea that they could become just like the other drug peddlers in the medical industry. If they could find diseases that they could sell, peddle drugs to, whoa, now they have it. So there's your answer. I see it all through the lens of clarity, period. Autism has always been diagnosed by making judgments about a child's behavior. There are no blood or biologic tests. For decades, the diagnosis was given only to kids with severe language and social impairments and unusual repetitious behaviors. Okay, fine. Many children with severe autism hit themselves or others, didn't speak, and didn't make eye contact. Sounds like most liberals I've known. Most of the kids in Marin County sound like that. They hit themselves with marijuana once a day, or they hit themselves with a spike they don't speak. No, they don't. They're like, and they don't make eye contact. Absolutely born liberals. Here's another 8 years, been in a day program with intense services, still doesn't talk. He's not toilet trained. 19 years old? He's not toilet trained? And he has a history of trying to eat anything, even broken glass? My friends, that is not autism. That's insanity. He belongs in a mental hospital. That's what they were built for. Poor, unfortunate children like this so that they can get the proper care that they need. They're not autistic. They need a mental hospital with attendance. So now, there it is. Now we got a spectrum of so-called illnesses, autism. They're mentally retarded. It's a sad thing. It's not anything to laugh at. It's not something to laugh at, but stop diagnosing every idiot, moron, stupid kid with a disease to give them a justification. somebody doesn't bang his head against the wall. Does that get you going on the right track or not?
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
You know, people are trying to silence Michael Savage. That's me. I need your help. It's a big battle, a legal battle. The opposition has unlimited funds. I don't. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com, contribute $5, $10, $1,000, $10,000. You'll notice that you can contribute to the Legal Defense Fund under a new address. The mail goes to the Michael Savage, that's if a check, a money order, cash, Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. Thank you for helping protect freedom of speech. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. And God bless you for helping protect freedom of speech. You know what, I'm going to open it up to anything. Give me some rock and roll. Let's do, do you have The Great Pretender by The Platters? I heard it the other night. I really loved it over the weekend. I was in a very sad, depressed mood. I was alone. I go into these moods in and out. I admit it. I'm not ashamed of it. You know, it gets back to something. You got it. Look at that. Follow the bouncing Prozac pill. Follow it along the bottom of the radio speaker, the bouncing Prozac pill.
I pretend too much. I'm lonely, but no one can tell. Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender.
Ooh.
Adrift in a world of my own. I play the game, but to my real shame, you've left me to dream all alone.
Great song, actually, to be honest with you. Anyway, turn it on. It's my own thing. But so I'm getting into one of those moods, and I decide to have a couple of drinks by myself, which I did. And I had a couple of drinks, and the mood went away. But the thing I'm telling you is that life sucks. And once you accept that life sucks, it becomes easier to deal with. And that's why there's so much weakness in America, is because we're deluded into thinking that we're supposed to be happy, and everyone else is happy, and you're the only one who's feeling lonely, or you're feeling life's burdens and no one else, and you look at the ads every minute, there's a ha-ha and a ho-ho and a hee and it, and the media continuously drives this concept that everyone else is having a great time except you. You're the only one having a miserable time. But in fact, this is what life is. And a lot of it is the fact that you were raised, if you're a person under 45, you were probably raised in a Spockian, nightmare where you were told that life is pleasant, life is easy, life is good, and maybe it is for you. Maybe you're a lucky person. You'd be the exception. You're not the norm. For most people, life is a grind, life is a bore, and life is difficult, and life sucks. And there is no happiness. Happiness is fleeting. Happiness is transient. Happiness exists here and there. You have moments of happiness, whatever they may be for you. I don't know what they are. The birth of a child, the wedding of your daughter. I don't know what the hat. Walking your child, seeing the kid in the graduation hat. Whatever it is, I don't know, getting a promotion, seeing a book published. There are small moments, but basically it's a flat line of difficulty for the average person. Then you get sick and you suffer, and then you die a horrible death, usually alone in a home or in a hospital. And once you accept that that's the terms, that's the deal, that's it. It isn't that bad when you realize what people have suffered through the ages. So what you have to do is toughen yourself up, and you have to learn that life is not the delusion that if only there was another elected official out there who gave you free medical care, we gave you prescription drugs, you'd be happy if you had prescription drugs. If only you had more prescription drugs, more crutches from the government, then you'd be happy. Then you got to pray a lot. I mean, you got to go back to the holy books that your fathers or grandfathers, you're only probably, no matter who you are, let's say your hair is green and you got 18 nose rings and nipple rings and this ring and that ring, and you're running around in L.A. twinkling around thinking you're free, you're free, you're free. I don't hear freedom. I hear slavery. The more I hear those rings rattle, the more I know you're a slave. You're probably only two generations at most away from a very religious person in your family. Max, two generations. The most. Someone who actually believed in the Word of God and went to church or synagogue. And you may find that that, you know, is the way to go. You know, there are. What I found is that there's no single way to go in my own case. It doesn't work for you. It works for me. You got to do an awful lot of different things. Exercise, vitamins, eat right, know how to control yourself, know where to get your pleasure, know where not to get your pleasure. You got to pray. You got to believe in God. You know, everything is part of the whole. There's no single path for the modern man. There's no simple solution for it all. In other words, you just got to deal with life's burdens. Or else, what are you going to do? What are you going to kill yourself? So the government keeps promising you stuff they can't deliver in order to hypnotize you, like Obama and Hillary and Edwards. All they would do was hypnotizing the schmuck out there that George Bush is mean, the Republicans are evil, and if they're elected, they're going to make you happier because they're going to give you free prescription drugs. Well, okay, buddy, you believe in Santa Claus, you can believe in Obama or Hillary Clinton. So it is related to politics, what I'm saying to you. We're living in a delusional nation. Everything is fantasy. We all watch too much TV, too many movies. I myself do. I admit it. I don't know how much of what how many movies I've watched. If I could redo one thing in my life, I would never have watched movies or television in my life. I can't imagine life without it. I've been brainwashed since I'm a child. Remember, I'm born in the television age. Would you believe I go back to a time before there was television? Can you believe that? That's amazing. But I remember living in a time when there was no television in a house. There was only a radio. And we would sit around and listen to the radio. I'd lie on my father's lap. He'd smoke Philip Morris, God rest his soul. And we'd listen to shows like The Green Hornet and whatever. And you had to use your imagination. When you listen to radio as a child, this is why I'm so talented in radio. Because I grew up on radio. Don't you understand there's a difference? It's not that there were people who are younger than me who can't do radio, but my father used to explain to me that radio was actually a better medium. He used to say to me, I like radio better. I said, why, Dad? Because you have to. He used to say to me, because you have to use your imagination. I said, oh, okay. So he taught me how to use my imagination. Not that it was too hard for me to do so. There was so much tragedy in my youth that I learned to live in a fantasy world. I created my own fantasy world in order to overcome the tragedy of my childhood. But that's good. That is good. That's what creative people do. They create with their sadness. They create with their misery. They don't succumb to a drug. Don't you understand that? That when you suppress sadness, when you suppress loneliness, when you keep suppressing these things with drugs, you're killing yourself. It's a small death. It's a petite mort. You know what I'm saying? Le petite mort. But it's not even the pleasure of the petite mort. Play the Green Hornet for the audience. They don't know what I'm talking about.
He hunts the biggest of all games. Public enemies who try to destroy our America.
Turn it off. This is horrible. Bad radio. What is this now? 1-800-449. Jesse Jackson warns of harm to parties. Look who's talking. A real halo. This just came out on Judge. Jesse Jackson warns of irreparable harm to party. Here's a guy who wrecked the Democrat Party with his racial divide and hatred and his bunko, him and the other one. Him and the other one with the white collar. No one knows where he went to divinity school. Jesse High Jackson. The Democrats. He's advising them how to run the party now. Oh, great. 1-800-499-8255. MichaelStavish.com. What do you want to talk about? Many of you don't know how to raise children. You need me to tell you. You do. Many of you don't have a parent. You don't have a father. You don't have an uncle. You have no one to rely upon. And you don't know what to do. You don't know how to turn. And I'm telling you that this coddling stuff, I'm not saying hit your kid. Don't get me wrong. I'm not giving you that advice. But you got to teach your child reality. And you got to teach your child that life is not a bowl of cherries. You got to teach them that life needs to be that life is hard. Life is going to leave you alone a lot. You got to teach your child to be alone a lot. Did you know that? You know, you got to teach your child how to be alone a lot in order to be alone a lot, because he's going to be alone a lot when he grows up. Did you hear what I just said? We don't live in a commune. He's not going to live in Ding Dong School the rest of his life. Teach your child how to be alone. I remember when my first child was a baby, I didn't know how to raise an infant, so I turned to various cultures for advice. I mean, I was an anthropologist at the time, and I was immersing myself in Native American, everything I could read on the on tribal lore. I read South Pacific, this and that. But one of the things I read was how the Native Americans, some of the tribes, raised their young sons to be tough, basically. And when the young baby, if it was a boy baby, started to cry, they'd wrap the baby in a papoose and then put the papoose out on a tree outside the teepee until the baby screamed and cried till he didn't scream anymore. I read that. Now, of course, today the Child Protective Service is the ones that will not go to the home of a talk show host who imagined doing his own daughter and son and his son's friends, allegedly. The same CPS run by the hippopotamuses in Child Protective Services, the mean-faced, clipped-haired hippos who run these agencies, would, of course, arrest a Native American who did that today. But it was a pretty good idea. In other words, a child will cry and cry and cry till there's no crying left. And guess what? Then the child becomes hardened. He's harder as a result. Oh, he doesn't feel as much as you want him to feel. Oh, he doesn't know. He doesn't feel like you want him to feel. You want him to be a feeling man? You want him to be a metrosexual son? Maybe you don't want him to be a metrosexual son. Maybe if you raised your son a little bit more like that, and then you watched a few shows on the Spetsnaz training for the Russian Special Forces and see how tough these guys are compared to even our toughest of tough. In other words, what they do in the Special Forces in Russia to train their men, you couldn't do here in America. They consider what the Russian Special Forces do to each other makes waterboarding look like a picnic on Sunday. But don't tell that to Obama. What they do to each other in training, they punch each other in the nose. There are no teeth guards. There are no nose guards. They beat each other up. And if the guy can't handle it, they throw him out of the Russian Special Forces. Here, right away, Obama would break down the Marine training or the Special Forces training, saying it's a little too rough, okay? Now you understand where we're at? When we have Marines who actually are trained to hunt and kill and go out and hunt and kill like they've been trained to do as kids, and that's why they're tough enough to go into the U.S. Marines, and they do the job they were trained to do. What happens? Some puke wearing a uniform who's really a lawyer who's too stupid to get a job in civilian life goes after the kid who does his job. That's where I'm concerned about my country. I'll be right back.
Yeah. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
I have a couple of things I want to tell you about. A, how I just survived coffee at a Starbucks in San Francisco. This took the patience of Job. Before the show, I went down. I do almost everything myself to know what Life 101 really is. I could hire someone. But, you know, I figured out it's actually good for me to otherwise I wind up like George Bush Sr. Wow, golly be gee, that's a checkout stand in a supermarket. Whoa, cool. Wow, that's a laser. Ooh. No, I got to go buy coffee and see how you people suffer, fools, ungladly. Just before the show, I ran out for a Starbucks. Now, I survived Starbucks. It's not easy, I got to tell you. I'm in a rush. It's like, you know, 20 minutes before the show. I should have sent someone out for it, but I tend to work alone. I like to be alone. I ran out for a coffee. I figured I could sneak in at that time, though. And bingo, I hit three people ahead of me, and a girl jumps in ahead of me. And the three people, everyone's cute. And what kind of the sweet do you want? I think, and there were men, and everyone was with a cute. No one would say, just give me the blueberry cake or give me the oatmeal cookie. Everything was like with a cutesy thing. Oh, I think I'll have the. Oh, you're such a sweetie pie. All right, so I had to live through them. The feet were curling up inside the shoe on that one. I don't say anything. So now there's only one in front of me. And did I hit the lottery with her? I figured she looked normal. She was going to say coffee and get out of there. But no, here it was. I'll have a double grande latte espresso decaf with extra low-fat cream and extra foam and a soy blast sprinkle, please. I'm not making this up. I said, no. Now I'm getting enraged inside. My eyes are already searching to take it out on something. Again, she repeated. The guy didn't even know what she said. That's right. And a sweet voice on it. I'll have a double grande latte espresso decaf with extra low-fat cream and extra foam and a soy blast sprinkle, please. And then, to top it off, after the guy makes it for her, she pulls out a coupon, a transgender discount. In San Francisco, the mayor gives out transgender discount coupons. Insane societies, they used to give out discount coupons to war veterans. In this city, they give them out to transgendered people. That's right. In San Francisco, TGIF has a new meaning. That's right. TGIF has a new meaning in San Francisco. Transgenders, it's Friday. Prior to surviving Starbucks, I did something even more threatening to my psyche, which was I went to Fisherman's. I got into the city early, so I went by bicycle to Fisherman's Wharf. I haven't been there for a year. I stopped going for about a year. I went once this year. And I went and had a bowl of clam chowder soup and some joint near the water. The guy gave me a bowl of cornstarch with the droppings of a clam in it. I don't know how they didn't get arrested for this. How do they sell this on Fisherman's Wharf? Then the nerve of this mutt, he says to me, do you want a cup or a bowl? I was in a rush. I was on the phone. I said, give me a cup. The cup was $5.95. A bowl would have been a dollar more. I paid and left. I didn't care. But the point was the soup was garbage. How do they serve this to tourists? With it was like cornstarch with the essence of a squeezed clam in it? But the schmucks don't know what they're eating. That's why they call it the Redneck Riviera. You should see the blimps walking around down there. You know, you should see the average American. I don't know what they have in their brains. Like IQ average, 65 after a fish meal. They walk into cars. They walk in front of cable cars like blimps floating around. Stuffed, stupid, morons. You can push them in any direction you want. So I'm bicycling back past two U.S. warships from World War II, the Jeremiah O'Brien and the USS Pompanito, a U.S. submarine from World War II. You marvel at it. 120 men were in that thing in World War II. If you were to take that ship today and look at the average fat, obese, disgusting American tourist walking on Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco, A, you couldn't get more than 18 of them into that submarine. B, you'd have to sue the Navy under the ADA to have them blowtorch open the hatches to get them in and out.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Savage Nation in a different note, in a different key. Stuff from the autobiography that's never been seen before, because I just found it today. I don't know how it happened. Told you the movie guys came out. Excuse me, they're coming out Sunday. We've been talking. And I just dug up this stuff from a proposed autobiography that I started writing in 1988-89, that period, 87-88-89. And it's very important that I read some of it to you today. Important for myself, but it raises the issue of how much do you really want to know? Is it really about me? Is it about America? Do I just represent a phase of American history from when I was born until like this period? How I've changed, how the country's changed, the opportunity that was granted to me as a boy without connections, what I have, which is significant, by the way. I have a great amount. I don't mean in things. I have things. I don't mean that. I have way beyond things. And the country enabled me to achieve these things despite every obstacle known to mankind thrown in my way. You know, the Bible says, do not put a stumbling block in the way of the blind. Well, I had stumbling blocks put in the way of me, but I wasn't blind, and I was able to overcome them. Not bad. Nice use of words. I should consider talk radio for a career, shouldn't I? Well, I have considered talk radio for a career, and here I am. And again, I have stumbling blocks. But these stumbling blocks are being put there by degenerates and terrorists, and they too shall be overcome. I can guarantee it as I stand here. They're going to be shocked what happens in a very short period of time. Right now they're celebrating and they think they're victorious. But as in all battles, it's not over till it's over. And I haven't begun to fight yet. Trust me. Just trust me. My powder is dry. But we'll let that go. So anyway, I went through this archival material. I found stuff that's quite revealing that I don't want to read on the air, and I don't think I'm ever going to publish. It's too painful, frankly. And, you know, the age has changed in a strange way. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. If you go onto YouTube or the sex tubes or any of those, people show you much more than you ever wanted to know about people, you know? But in a strange way, as people reveal more of themselves physically, they reveal less of themselves emotionally, spiritually, etc. In other words, there's more of the body activity than there is of the soul activity in this country today. And that is because the soul is dead. The soul is dying in this country. We have almost a soulless generation of ghouls running around who think it's perfectly okay to strip naked and have sex in front of a camera and put it onto the internet. What does that tell you about these people? They're sick. They're empty souls. They're ghouls. Not because they're having sex. Sex is beautiful. Love is great. But to show it to strangers like this, that's because they're empty inside. Okay. But at the same time, rarely do you read a novel that shows the inner man or the inner woman anymore. That's not the nature of novels today or of writing today. That was that revelation. That thing was big in the 50s, 60s, 70s. But today it's not really there. Today it's stick figures moving across a canvas. Today it's movies, cinematic. Bah, he did this, she did that, he did that, he did this, they went here, they went there, they wore this, they wore that, they ate this, they ate that. But like what I'm doing now is not that at all. So I'm going to do a little bit more of it. First, I'm going to take some calls. Then I'm going to read you from another piece just found. Again, 8.5 by 11, lined yellow sheets, perfect handwriting, only a few pages long of another little phase that may or may not be in the final movie. First, a call. Steve, KNEW, San Francisco. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, you're a biblical prophet. That's why you speak so much to us, because you are inspired by God. I went to a beautiful oratorio at the San Francisco Symphony called Elijah. It's written by Mendelssohn. And as I read through the words to the oratorio, I realized that's exactly that you are like Elijah, trying to bring light to your people, the Americans, and bring us back to our true ways. And we should be spreading Americanism and not this internationalism.
Which I would call pan-globalism, which is a sort of new way of putting it. Steve, thank you. Very heartfelt. Please tell me the name of that piece again.
Elijah. It's an oratorio.
Oh, Elijah. I hear you. Elijah the prophet.
Right. And it's
Elijah by Mendelssohn. Beowulf, see if you can get that for me. Elijah by Mendelssohn. God bless you. Thanks, Steve. So here it is. Written a number of years ago. Newly Over, it's called. Few pages. Shall I read it or not? Buddy needs to know. You want it or not? Here it goes. The winter was newly over. Their little valley radiated that natural magnetism known through eternity, again tossing over whether to move out of there forever, sell the house to Manhattan, refine the excitement of the streets and people, to recapture their East Village youth. No, not so much that, to reconnect with reactive people, as put by Mary, now so pissed at all these non-reactive Bay Area types. So they were taking one of their fairly regular walks, and had just come from the back of the valley where the road ends. The stream was running clear and fast. After months of drought and much talk about water rationing, it had rained, sometimes without stop, for weeks. They were happy in their own way this morning and had agreed not to discuss moving to try and forget the big decision for this perfect spring morning. So a car, an old American gold-colored car, slowly pulls up beside them. The driver rolls down the passenger window and hawks at them. Marty, I see you're enjoying yourself. How you been? He immediately recognized the driver as a neighbor from down the valley, who he remembered from a few years before. introduced by a mutual friend who had since moved away. Martin and this guy David never kept up their friendship, but he remembered him well. In his dark sunglasses, the driver of this old gold Dodge looked like the gangster father he had told Marty about years before. Marty loved to tell the story. It goes like this. This guy I know, I see him in town once in a while. His father's an old Jewish mob guy in Miami. So one day he's listening to the radio. Can you believe this story? So one day he's listening to the radio, and he hears a talk show guy he knows start to call him a crook, a thief like that. So his father, Max, picks up the phone, calls the station, and says, "You know who this is? It's Max. And I'll make you a bet," he says to the talk show host. "I'll bet I'll be down there in your station in 10 minutes, and he hangs up. Then he hurries out and tells his son, David, then a kid of 13, "You listen, David. Don't change the station." Sure enough, about 10 minutes later, the kid hears screaming and yelling in the studio. A table, a chair, ashtrays are flying. He hears his father roar, "Go ahead, keep up your lies. You know what's in store." So here's this gangster's son, all mellowing out in a little town years later. He leans over and smiles at Martin and Mary. "I've just gotten over an 8-week bout with the flu. What's with you guys?" "Oh, we're tossing up whether to leave here again, to sell the house and start again." "Listen, forget it. You're middle-aged. You don't have the energy to move. No one else would want you, so you're stuck together. There ain't no new friends waiting for you because, let's face it, how many people do you really like?" Marty and Mary turned to each other and laughed. At last, someone who ventured an opinion, and he didn't sound all wrong either. Looking around themselves at the clean, peaceful valley, the busy little mountain birds, the flowering fruit trees, with the clear, fast-flowing stream in the background, they both knew a decision had been made for them. They exchanged phone numbers with David and resigned themselves to life as it is, realizing that the many illusory realities of the world would have to hold a meeting and present themselves as a Federal Express offer to get these two ex-New Yorkers off their hillside and moving ever again. I don't know, but I'm reading my own stuff. I didn't know I was this kind of interesting. This stuff is good. But that last piece I read you about the gangster's son, I'll tell you the truth, I had forgotten that story, that he had a father who beat up a radio talk show host, and he heard it on the radio. I can't believe that story. But, I mean, it was true. The guy told it to me. It had to be true. I mean, remember, I'm talking about a time I wasn't in radio. He told me the story. I wasn't in radio then. I'm talking 25 years ago. Where is that guy today? God, the gangster's son. Why did I meet so many interesting people in my life? I've always sought out the odd, you know. I've always met interesting people. I've always sought them out. It's fascinating. I'm not a collector of people, but there are interesting people on the planet. I mean, why not try to know them? I didn't meet these guys because I can get something from them. I wasn't looking to scam anything out of these people. I like people with a life force, with life. I don't care whether they're an impoverished preacher. I don't care what their race is. I don't care what their religion is. I care about someone's being. I care about someone's being. Get what I'm saying? San Diego, Don, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, well, buddy, I'm telling you, I like Buddy. Keep it up. Keep preaching, because you got me forever.
Buddy, oh, I get it. Buddy, the inner Buddy who wants people to say, keep doing it. Thank you. As long as you're enjoying the stories, that's all. What's this one? There's another yellow sheet. I'm going to stop because I shouldn't do this. I'm going to get manicky now and make a mistake. All right, here's one paragraph. And I'm going to make this an interactive thing. This title is called Judas Priest, 1968, Honolulu. They came, hair-shaved, eyes mostly unblinking, 7 hours from hell, renting motorcycles one or two a week, would choose to fly over Polly's Cliffs rather than return to Nam. Question, who am I talking about? Huh? Marty, has anybody ever told you will be a cardinal, a criminal, or an executioner? Said Gerardo Noelano in his small Kailua restaurant, jeering at the pre-New Year's diners. How's that for a line? Marty, has anybody ever told you will be a cardinal, a criminal, or an executioner? Said Gerardo Noelano in his small Kailua restaurant, jeering at the pre-New Year's diners. The party of eight looked up at the clever Italian. His graying hair added highlights to an otherwise diminishing life. A pilot for Mussolini's fascist air force, Gerardo held two doctorates and now wrote a small monthly column for a Turin newspaper from his tropical outpost. Renata, his wife from Brooklyn, supervised or did all the delicious meals, allowing her brilliant husband the pleasure of circulating in a suit and tie amongst their guests. He was now a leftist, supporting McGovern's impossible presidential climb, and loved it when students from the university came over the mountain to dine on Renata's ravioli while listening to his eloquent bull crap. Martin was the first to challenge his rule ever since that bum tried and was tossed out on his behind in 1964. The Italian's pride was now so fragile that the mere suggestion of a threat had him dig into his loafers and draw upon archaic word swords from his fascist past. Yes, Mart, you have the killer instinct, but confuse yourself with a saint. Satisfied, the Italian moved back a few small steps, better to observe his antagonist. Martin did not dislike the Italian. He liked his jovial thrusts. In fact, began to encourage them. Never felt so good since the crib on Longfellow Avenue. His father, Jake, jabbing him with an extended index finger in the chest. Come on, Marty, wake up. You've got a lot to do. Restored to infant privilege, Martin thrived in his element. Paul, his nerdy roommate, one of five, jumped right in. That's true, Marty. You only think you're nice. In reality, you're not easy to live with. And you're easy? With your health food manias? Your constant jabbering about eco-catastrophes? And the damn war, retorted Martin. At least I don't go around snapping up. Well, I can't even read this word. Why? Because you got lucky. I can't even read this. See, some of it's not for me. Paul threw his glass of Chianti. It came from a real straw-plated bottle. Marty ducked, and the smelly red wine hit the portrait of some Italian village. Let me read this. Paul threw his glass of Chianti. It came from a real straw-plated bottle. Marty ducked, and the smelly red wine hit the portrait of some Italian village painted by Gerardo. It looked like it had been done by an Alzheimer's patient on a good day. The wine dripped down the wall, running on the vinyl booth. Paul and Martin had been working up their hatred for some time.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Sacramento, Rich, you're on the Savage Nation topic. Please, what's bugging you?
Dr. Michael Savage.
Yes. How are you? What's on your mind?
Yeah. When I was 15, my grandparents took me to Hawaii, and we weren't fortunate enough to sit first class on the plane, and this elderly lady went to the bathrooms. We're about five rows up, and She apparently emptied out her colostomy bag, and, oh, my God, the smell.
Wait. Well, let's slow down. She emptied it out where, in the sink?
No, in the bathroom, in the toilet in the bathroom. But
Hold. Let's not get too graphic. So the plane was experiencing a little roughage?
The smell for about 3 hours.
Oh, my God. So you were sitting in first class but next to the restroom?
No, not in first class. We were back in the middle of the back near the back of the plane, you know. But I'm just saying, we were about five rows up from the bathrooms, and
you could still smell the stink there.
Are you kidding me? It filled the whole plane. It was
well. You see, I think you're being illiberal about this. The poor woman was suffering, and if you were a Mother Teresa type, you would have offered to rinse her colostomy bag for her.
Michael, you know what I love? I love when you do your nostalgia about your youth. It brings me back to my Italian upbringing. Sometime I would love to tell you about my grandfather.
Rich, where'd you grow up? What city?
Well, I grew up in down by Glendora, but my grandparents came from New York. My grandfather was my great-grandfather's chauffeur, and he had seven daughters, and he was family, you know, in the family.
Well, wait a minute. Your great-grandfather was your grandfather's chauffeur?
And my grandpa was his chauffeur, and he fell in love with my grandma Dolly, and my great grandpa threatened to kill him, but my grandfather was so in love with her, he told my grandpa, "I love Dolly, I'm going to marry her someday." And I swear, and he went ahead and he opened up a little market in New York, and when the grandpa died, there was no sons to carry on the business, and just like in the movies, they were threatened, and that's when they moved to Glendora, California, Michael.
Oh my God, you really are the American, like the American novel.
When you talk about, you know, Warren and New York and stuff, it brings back those memories. When they moved to Glendora, my aunt Sally wanted a new car, and the guy wouldn't throw in a radio, and my grandmother, my grandpa's name, and what do you know, they threw in the radio. I mean, I could tell you.
He mentioned the grandfather's name, and the guy gave the car for free.
Yeah, when you mention this stuff, Michael, I love it. It brings it back, man.
He said, "Madam, do me a favor, take the dealership."
Oh, Michael, I love it.
So, Rich, you yourself today are legitimate, though, I hope.
Oh, I swear. Oh, yeah.
I don't care. It's your business. It's your business, and I don't want to know anything about it. But, Rich, do you ever go back to the old country, meaning New York City?
I've never been there. I've always wanted to.
It's overrated, Rich. It's overrated. You know, it really is. You could find what you're looking for virtually anywhere except in Glendora. I don't know. Is there an Italian community in Glendora?
Oh, yeah. We used to go to this little deli called Claro's. They used to make their own homemade Italian sausage there. Michael, I'm adopted. I'm not even pure. I'm not even born Italian, but my grandparents raised me that way.
And that's beautiful. Well, you sure have a love for your family, huh?
And then my grandparents would get mad at each other and start cussing in Italian. That, I miss it, Michael. I miss it.
Hold on. Let me ask you something. This is interesting. Before we go, they obviously lived a long life together, right? How many years were they married?
Well, they were married since they were 15 and 14.
No, but are they still living?
Huh? No. They both died.
All right. So how many years were they married before someone died?
Oh, gosh. Almost, let's see, 70 years.
70 years. And did they have a volatile relationship, meaning verbally they yelled at each other?
Near the end, yes, especially my grandfather. We had a cabin in Big Bear down in Southern California.
See, I'm getting at something. Rich, that's the way people generally related to each other in another generation. They didn't talk quiet, and God forbid you should raise your voice, and they call a psychiatrist. They yelled at each other. I think that those who yell at each other stay together.
We loved each other, Michael, but we would scream every holiday. I married a German woman.
What do you mean, only on the holidays? What was wrong with your family that you waited for a holiday to yell at each other?
I married a German woman. I go to their house. We open the presents. The mother's over there knitting, and the father is reading a book, and I'm like, where's the yelling?
What is wrong with them? Why are they so quiet? Why are they ignoring us? It's a cultural thing. It really is.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage.